Good morning and welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Regan McCarthy in for Tom Flanagan. Today we're talking with local beekeepers about the importance of bees in our community. If you want to join in the buzz, you can give us a call at 414-1234, or if you're outside Tallahassee, try us at 1-800-926-8809. You can also send us an email at perspectives@wfsu.org. Joining us today in the studio are members of the Appalachian Beekeepers Association. And I'll just let all of you introduce yourselves quickly. Bob, you're the new president of the club, and so we'll start with you.
I'm Bob Steele. I'm a retired physician, president of ABA.
I'm Tracy Schneider, and I've been beekeeping for 5 years.
I'm Rick Flagg. I've been doing the beekeeping thing for 5 years now. This is Tracy and I are both starting our sixth year this season.
Very cool.
And I'll chime in with that. This is Melanie Annis. This is the beginning of my sixth year keeping bees as well.
All right, great. So when I knew that I was going to be talking with you guys, one of the first things that I thought about is, you know, beekeeping is such an unusual hobby, I think. And it's not something that a lot of people, I think like, oh, gosh, wow, I'd like to become a beekeeper. I just wondered if you guys might want to tell me a little bit about what made you want to become a beekeeper. Tracy, we'll start with you. You just started 5 years ago, you said?
Yeah, going into my sixth year. I had several friends who were beekeeping, and I got interested in it that way through seeing their bees. And I also had a large organic garden and was interested in how that could help with the gardening. And ironically, I've now become more interested in the bees than in the gardening.
Very cool. What about you, Rick?
Well, I actually was tricked into it. Paul Davis, a friend of mine, we used to do a morning show together on a local rock station, which shall not be named. But he invited me out to his farm in Jefferson County one day to do a little work around the thing, and it turned out to be bee work, and I got hooked right away. One day I will find a way to pay him back for what he did to me. Because once you get into it, it can sort of take over your life.
That's such a funny thing to say that you got hooked by the bees. What's cool about bees?
Well, remember, I cover the legislature on a day-to-day basis. I cover state government and politics. The bees all work together for a common goal, and they don't for lack of a better phrase, they don't shaft each other over to get ahead. I like the idea of working together for one common goal. It's so, yin and yang to what I do day to day. It just reassures you that somewhere, somehow on this planet, there are creatures that can work together for a common good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my uncle is actually a beekeeper in Indiana, and we have a big woods where he keeps his bees and a few hives, and he's actually got benches set up there. And my grandparents and my family love to sit there and watch the bees and see, I think, what you're talking about.
Basis. When I saw the beekeeping workshop, it was 6 years ago, and I said, well, let me give myself a birthday present, go out, do the workshop, see what I think, and I've been hooked ever since. So it allows me to stay in touch with the changing of the seasons the way a garden would, and to, as Rick says, observe the hive, very calming after a stressful day. My dog and I used to go out and sit right next to the entrance to the hive at the end of the day and watch the bees coming in and coming out. They evolve through their life doing different jobs. And if one group happens to be taken away, another group will come in and take over and do that job again. So no one's saying, I'm not going to clean up that mess.
Mm-hmm. Bob, as the president of the club here, I assume you're one of our most senior beekeepers. How many years have you been working as a beekeeper? Or
no, the club formed about 3 years before I got in. I'm 1 year ahead of these people. I got into beekeeping for a little bit different reason. I'm a voracious reader, and I got to seeing the news articles about bees being in trouble and got to reading about bees and found them to be most fascinating creatures and took the bee course just like these people did and got into beekeeping that way just because I was interested in bees. And that leads me to the point that you will hear about the colony collapse disorder. That's really pretty. The two big issues about bees are colony collapse disorder and Africanized bees, and we are important in both of those. The colony collapse disorder is more myth than anything else. There are a couple of parasitic organisms that came in here about 25 years ago that are really wreaking havoc with bees. And they're doing it more in feral – they're doing it in all bees. The thing is that managed beehives get treated for the varroa mite and the small hive beetle, and feral hives don't. So feral hives are the ones that are suffering the most. So you won't find as many feral hives out there. That's colonies that you see in the tree and that sort of stuff that used to be around everywhere. They're not nearly as many of those now as there used to be. The second thing is the Africanized bees. And I was very interested in that. And Africanized bees were brought into South America, as most people know, and then are migrating north. They haven't gotten this far yet. They're pretty much isolated below the I-4 corridor. But the thing is that the biggest thing we can do to help against Africanized bees is to have more good bees, our bees. And hopefully we will eventually breed out the bad aspect of the Africanized bees. And so if we have good stock bees around everywhere, there won't be a vacuum for Africanized bees to fill. And our bees will breed with the African bees and hopefully take out their bad strains.
And so that's one of the reasons you wanted to be a beekeeper then,
right,
is to help provide that native bee, a home for that native bee and a place for that native bee to be.
Correct.
So let's talk a little bit more about colony collapse disorder. I think a lot of people have read about that. It sounds like a pretty scary, serious issue, but I can't really picture what that is. Has that happened to any of you or any of your hives or hives of friends that you know?
I don't think it's happened. I don't think we would necessarily know it. It's usually large-scale beekeepers, mm-hmm. but we know that anywhere from 30 to 50% of your colonies will not make it through the winter. So if you start with, as I did, two colonies in fall, and they were fairly strong because of different issues, you may lose one, which I did. And that simply meant I went out one day and all the bees were gone. The bees that were left were dead and everyone else was gone. Where they went, we don't know. But we know that the honeybee is not native to North America and does not live in the wild very long on its own. So that's why the name of our group are beekeepers. We keep bees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the – go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so colony collapse doesn't describe like the hive caving in. It's not a visual. It's the collapse of the structure of the bee
colony.
The community.
Yeah, the bees simply disappear. You go out there one day and they're gone. That's colony collapse. And that – you still lose them anyway. I've lost three hives in the past year, one to the cold weather, the last cold snap that came through. I lost one to hive beetles. Damn them. And one to wax moths. I mean, that's part of the trade. In fact, the more hives you get, the more you have to get into pest management. But that sort of thing can be handled. Colony collapse is a whole different thing. And some of the research I've seen is there's not one smoking gun. It's everything we're doing to the bees. It's – you know, fungicides that did not used to be toxic are now toxic because of all the other stressors that are on the bees. There were, I think, like 7 or 8 viruses that attack bees, and it used to be you'd find 1 or 2 in a hive, and they could deal with that. Now they're finding 4 and 5 in the hive, and it just wears the bees down. That's what colony collapse is about. It's not one thing; it's everything.
Interesting. And so, as you're working to protect your bees, you know, Bob, you mentioned one thing that you're doing to help protect bees is being a beekeeper. And people are worried about this issue. They're worried about the impact it will have on our agriculture, on your own gardens. Not everybody can be a beekeeper. We don't all have the time or the funds. But are there things people can be doing besides being a beekeeper to help protect the area's bees?
Plant some flowers.
Yeah, planting things that the bees like to forage on.
And stop mowing your lawn.
Exactly.
Yeah, let them bloom, actually. The city of Tallahassee has this mania. They want you to cut your lawn. But, I mean, the whole point of having bees is to have them pollinate flowers. And, you know, what the city considers weeds, those are food plants for the bees.
Some of the plants and flowers that you see growing in the medians and along the sides of the roads that get mowed down are essential for the bees. It's what they forage on. It's what they collect the nectar from to make the honey to bring back to their hives. And we need to just leave it alone, leave some wild space for the bees.
That's interesting. I didn't know bees would feed on grasses.
It's not grass. It's so
dandelions, it's the, for example.
The goldenrod, the little white flowers
clover.
That you see.
Mm-hmm.
Clover.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. So is there a specific type of flower if I want to help with the bees and maybe I still want to mow my lawn, but I'd like to create some wild spaces, wild gardens maybe. Should I be planting a handful of wildflowers or is there another flower that's particularly great for bees?
Anything that blooms.
Good point. But they love red clover.
Crimson clover.
And those little annoying plants, the Spanish needles, the little tiny white flowers, they love those things. I mean, the little needles are a pain, but they love them.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of colony collapse, I've done a little research on this, and I haven't been able to find out whether it's true or not, but I'm hoping you guys can tell me. I've heard that the bees and the colonies in North Florida are not facing as much trouble as the bees in the rest of the United States. Have you guys heard anything like that, or does it seem like, you know, as a country and as a globe, we're all sort of facing the same troubles?
I think one of the things going on in Florida is that we have a state government that takes it seriously. We have decent regulations and we have state beekeepers who not only regulate us, they help us. They tell us what to do. So we have the backing of the state behind us. We've got some of the best weather here for bees because it's so warm most of the year. You know, we don't have our hives buried in snow half the year. So that helps out. But, you know, there are all sorts of stressors, especially in South Florida. I mean, you've got the Africanized bees south of I-4. So I tend to think of North Florida as this nice little pocket. You're right. It's a great place to be a beekeeper. Although if you talk to some of the older guys who were here in the 70s, they say it used to be so much better. It used to be you put out a couple of hives, you would get 55-gallon barrels of honey. Not anymore.
All right. We're talking to the Appalachian Beekeepers Association. We'll be right back after a quick break. Good morning and welcome back to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. We're talking with the Appalachian Beekeepers Association about the importance of bees in our area. If you'd like to join in on the conversation, feel free to give us a call at 414-1234, or you can reach us if you're outside the Tallahassee area at 1-800-926-8809. And so during the break, we were talking a little bit about the fact that bees don't really travel very far when they're looking for food sources and flowers to pollinate. And so that might be a reason, Melanie, as you were saying, that people might want to be more careful about where they're using pesticides or pay attention to what neighbors are doing with their lawns.
That's definitely true. People talk about organic beekeeping, and you might be organic within your hive, but a bee will fly in up to 3-mile radius to forage for pollen, which is their protein source, and for nectar, which is their carbohydrate source. And it's only when they have a surplus of the carbohydrate do we get honey, because they begin storing that. But if you've got a neighbor even a half mile away who's just put down some fumigant, the bees might be picking that up in that area. Or my bees might be overlapping bees from a hive that might be 5 miles away. And if that hive is not well managed, has pests, those pests could be transferred to my bees and be brought back to the hive. So it really is an integrated system.
Mm-hmm. That brings up something that I was thinking about. Rick, I know you keep an apiary there in Frenchtown, and it's you've got pretty close neighbors nearby.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, how do your neighbors respond to that? Is there a lot of support in the area for people who say, oh, great, we love that you're helping bees, or are people sort of afraid of what you're doing?
There was one neighbor who lived across the street who was worried about it and actually called the police to file a complaint. And, well, of course, the police found out they have no authority. The state regulates beekeepers and apiaries and pretty much preempts all the things of the state. But most of the neighbors have been pretty supportive. You just have to show a little respect for your neighbors. Like, they were concerned about bees flying over the fence, so I put a little screening up on the fence so the bees would have to fly over it and over their head. So, you know, you do little things like that. The biggest problems are if your neighbor has a swimming pool, because bees love chlorinated water. They seem to know it has some, you know, some good antibacterial properties to it. And if you've got a neighbor next door who has a pool, you will have your bees visiting them.
Interesting. Have any of you had any similar experiences with maybe figuring out ways to work with your neighbors? Tracy, it looks like maybe you have.
Yeah, I live in a great community in southeast Tallahassee, grassroots. And my neighbors have been wonderful and very interested in the bees, and they bring their friends and visitors by to see it. But the first year I had bees, they made, excuse the pun, a beeline for the community swimming pool. And they like to hang out there. They seem to like the splashing. You know, they're there to get the water, but that can be a problem when there are people in the pool. So, yes, that was an issue for me the first year. They seem to have come back now. I provide a water source for them right in front of the hives and try to get them to stay. But sometimes they'll drink out of my water source and then go see the pool too.
Mm-hmm. What's the best way to sort of provide outreach or to work with your neighbors to help them understand why bees are important? Melanie, any thoughts on that?
Definitely give them a jar of your honey.
Yeah.
I refer to my honey as award-winning priceless honey. I don't sell it, but I give it to people, and they really enjoy that. But we also, as a club, I have to give a plug to this club. It's the greatest club I've ever been part of.
It really is.
Great people willing to mentor and give of their time and their expertise, both online at our website as well as in our Facebook group, a Yahoo discussion board. And we conducted a viral study, which was unique in the United States. There were quite a number of beekeepers, I think maybe 50, that participated in analyzing what were these viruses that Rick was referring to and what goes on here. So the club also has tremendous outreach that's coordinated with Lisa Lazarus and many other people in the club to go to different schools or I don't know, I think we do maybe two or three outreach activities every single month. So whenever you see bees out in public, chances are we've got somebody from the club there. Bob, do you know how many we do?
I don't know an exact number, but you're right, Melanie. We go to schools and any civic organization and speak, and are well received.
Mm-hmm. Why is it important to do that kind of outreach?
Well, we're about the bees. We want to help the bees, promote the bees. We're trying to get a bee lab. Florida's the third leading state for bees in the country, and we need help getting something through the legislature so we can have a bee lab in our state to learn more about bees, more about what's adversely affecting bees so we can do something about it.
Mm-hmm. And just as a reminder to anyone listening, we're talking with the Appalachian Beekeepers Association. If you guys want to join into the conversation, you can give us a call at 414-1234. Or if you're outside of the Tallahassee area, you can reach us at 1-800-926-8809. Rick, you were talking a little bit about how the local rules don't have much of an impact on beekeepers, and most of that is overseen by the state government.
Right.
And it reminded me of a recent piece of legislation that was passed a few years ago that might help beekeepers out, and it made honey part of Florida's cottage industry. And so that means that beekeepers who want to sell their honey at a farmer's market or another way that's like directly to a customer don't have to follow quite as many regulations.
Right. The main difference is you don't have to have your honey bottled in what's called, you know, the state-approved kitchen, which has to meet all the restaurant health standards. That's a big deal, frankly. And I took advantage of that this year. I mean, I sold my honey at the Frenchtown Farmers Market, and you know, they wiped me out pretty much. It really has helped a lot of folks. And we're working on all sorts of things. At the market, we're talking about actually setting up our own kitchen so that beekeepers could come in, have their stuff bottled there, and then they would be free to sell it wherever they want. Because right now, you can't sell it on the internet if it's not bottled in a state-approved kitchen. You can't sell it – you can't have it like sold to someone else. I can't wholesale it to someone and have them sell it unless it goes through that kitchen process. So we're working on that. But you know, most of the beekeepers do sell honey in one way, shape, or form just because you got to do something with it. I mean, it piles up after a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think to be to take advantage of the cottage industry legislation that we were talking about, where you don't have to do as many regulations, you're limited to maybe making like $15,000 a year. Right, and so it's not you. It's not a livelihood a for a person.
I'm in no danger of heading anywhere near that. Let's put it this way.
I'd like to make a point. The best honey is the honey that comes out of your hive. But people don't really understand that almost every extraction of honey tastes different from every other extraction of honey. It purely depends on what hive, what the flowers, the bees are working when you extract your honey. And people should try to buy bee honey from the local beekeeper, because something like 70% of the honey sold in this country is imported from China, and where there are no regulations on it. And a lot of the stuff that you buy in the box stores, if you will, doesn't really meet the definition of honey. They heat it and ultra-filtrate it to get the pollen out so it won't crystallize as much. And then by definition, really, it's not honey. What you buy from the local beekeeper on the side of the road and such is real honey.
I like to explain to people that if you think about fine wines, where the wine grape comes from, what soil it's grown in, et cetera, all of that has influence on it. So the next time you have local honey, take a spoonful, put it on your tongue, let it warm, breathe in and breathe out before you swallow it, and you'll find that there's an infinite number of nuances and notes.
That's so true. And the honey that you get different times of year is completely different. You'll have early summer or spring honey that's light colored. You'll have fall honey that's darker and richer. And I can take honey off my hives, now and then 2 weeks from now, and that will taste completely different.
It looks like we've got a caller, so let's go ahead and go to our phones. We've got Jeff on line one, and he's got a question for our Beekeepers Association. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to Perspectives.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
Oh, hi, Jeff. Welcome to Perspectives. Do you have a question for our Beekeepers Association?
Yes. I'm a big honey fan, and I was just wondering if the Beekeepers Association has come out on any stand towards wetlands and swamps that produce the bees and provide the natural wildflowers and honey. And I live in Waukala County, where a county commission has done away with its wetlands ordinance and protection. They held a referendum, and people just didn't seem to make the connection between seafood and the beekeeping. So I just wondered if the association realizes, does anything towards protecting the habitat that is producing the bees, where the bees are getting their natural wildflowers and the pollen.
Yeah, okay. So what is the association doing? What sort of outreach are you doing? Maybe to raise awareness about the need for wildlife and wildflowers. And Bob, you've already touched a little bit on some of that outreach you guys are doing.
Well, we just like to make people aware of what bees are and where they get their nectar and what we can do to help bees. And you're right. The wetlands is certainly one of the places that bees thrive. And we're in support of anything that will help with bees. So I think we're probably on the same page.
All right.
But I don't think we've actually taken a position as
no.
a club because,
no,
I mean, it is the most diverse group of people you will ever run into in your life. So we tend to stick to bees and not get into, side issues. And I appreciate what's going on down in Waukala County with the concerns about the wetlands, but not really on our radar right now.
Right.
Yeah, we have everything from 16-year-olds to 80-year-olds, from housewives to FSU professors to – It is a wide gamut of people. We have about 180 members of our club.
Well, and it looks like we've got another call from someone who might be interested in being a new member to your club. We've got Dolores on line two, and she's got a question about how somebody can get started with beekeeping. Hello, Doris. Welcome to Perspectives.
Good morning. Thank you very much. My question had to do with the startup costs that a new person to beekeeping could expect to incur. Thank you very much.
What it'll cost you is about $150 for the hive, what we call wooden ware, and the support stuff with that. And the best way to start a beehive is with what we call a nuc, which is a nucleus hive, and that's going to cost you right now $130. It's not a hobby that you're going to make a lot of money at, but it's probably cheaper than golf.
It's way cheaper than golf.
You
can expect to. Another question related to that is, what can you expect to get out of it? You can expect to get about 2 or 3 gallons of honey the first year, and probably more after that.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the maybe tips that you guys might have for finding where to get your bees or finding where to get some of your supplies? Do you guys have any suggestions for somebody who wants to get started?
Normally at this point, we would put in a plug for our short course, which is coming up on Saturday. However, it's completely booked up. We had 100 slots and they're all signed up. So normally we would say just come out to the meeting now. If you can't go to the short course, come out to the meeting. Every second Tuesday we meet out at the IFAS building near the fairgrounds out on Paul Russell Road. And every beekeeper there would be glad to help. I mean, most of us have this sort of philosophy that we need to bring at least 2 more beekeepers into the fold. So, you know, we will work with anyone who wants to become a beekeeper. There's no problem about that. There are plenty of mentors. There are plenty of people that are willing to help you out. All it takes is, as Bob said, you know, $150 for the boxes and $125 for the bees, and you're there.
Mm-hmm. I read something recently, this discussion about how you would get started being a beekeeper, and I read something recently about the idea of finding wild bees in the woods and putting those in your hives. I'm wondering where you guys stand on that issue. Is it good because I'm protecting those bees, or is it
– We can't take an official position. The Appalachian Beekeepers Club does not – are not official swarm getters or anything. I captured the first swarm of the community, I think, last week. That's the way honeybees reproduce, is by swarming. When they swarm, they are docile. They are easy to put in a box and begin a hive. And that's the way a substantial number of people get started. It is real important to know that if you do catch a swarm, you need to requeen that hive, as that colony, as quickly as possible, to make sure that you have the proper queen running in the hive.
Okay, interesting. It looks like we've also got a couple emails here from people. Logan wrote in. He wants to know if honeybees aren't native to the area. Melanie, you were mentioning that honeybees are not native to North America. How did they get here?
Well, if you think about sugar and how much sugar is in our society today, that's great. But we didn't really have sugar in abundance until the early to middle part of the 1800s. Prior to that, so many people had their own honeybee hives or skeps. The honeybees in America, they believe, came from Europe. There were German bees. There were English bees. So the colonists coming over brought them. And there was a lot of traffic back and forth. But people kept bees as just part of having chickens for eggs and, you know, cows for milk, and that's what you did. And we did not eat quite the amount of sugar that we eat today by any means. One of the things I wanted to mention, Bob is exactly right. It costs a little bit of money to get started, and it's highly recommended if you're going to do it on your own to have 2 hives so that you have something to compare it with. You don't really know what you're looking at if you're only looking at one. But the easiest way, as Rick said, is come out to the meeting, learn what's going on, make friends with someone, become their assistant, be a mentee. And I know in my neighborhood, my hives are open. I've got 2 different neighbors who will come over and watch what's going on, which helps help them decide whether they really wanted to do it or not.
Mm-hmm. And you guys have a website that people would be able to visit if they wanted to learn more about when your club meets or what sorts of things you guys can offer, don't you?
Appalachian Beekeepers Association.
Appalachian Beekeepers Association. Very good.
That's a Google group, and there's also a Yahoo group, which you can join and be on a listserv to get a lot of – if you have questions, you post it, because we have a saying – if you are not confused, you're not keeping bees.
And we also have a Facebook group.
Okay, great. So they can also find you guys on
Facebook. So there are a lot of ways to find us.
But the meeting is the best way. It really is.
Great.
You cannot replace human contact in trying to answer some of these questions.
Okay. Second Tuesday of every month.
All right. Very good. We were talking a few minutes ago about, Bob, you were mentioning that some of the honey that people sell is more processed, and they do that to keep it from crystallizing. And it reminded me of something that I'd read about Tupelo honey and that somebody has sent us an email about. And they want to know, does Tupelo honey crystallize and turn into more like a sugar? And if not, why not?
It's because of the sugar constitution of Tupelo. Tupelo does not crystallize. It is one of the world standards for honey. And we think it's the best. I'll go back to the fact that the best honey is the first honey to come out of my hive.
Mine.
But bees are not the only pollinators either. We need to get that clear. But the another thing about commercial, what you buy in the store is it's all blended. So the homemaker is not getting a different product every month.
All right. And we'll talk more about that after a quick break. Welcome back to Perspectives. We're here with the Appalachian Beekeepers Association talking about the importance of bees in Tallahassee. If you'd like to join in the conversation, you can feel free to give us a call at 414-1234. Or if you're outside of the Tallahassee area, you can reach us at 1-800-926-8809. So before the break, we were talking a little bit about Tupelo honey, and I wanted to talk more about where does that come from. It seems like it's a really specific Florida honey, and who can tell me what's special about it?
Tupelo is from a specific gum tree that is located in the river basin of the Apalachicola River. And it's also in an area in South Carolina. That's the only two places in the world that I know of that Tupelo honey comes from. And it's just a nice tasting honey that became very popular. There's a bill before the legislature to make Tupelo the official honey of Florida.
Yeah, that bill is sponsored by Bill Montfort, a Tallahassee right. Democratic senator. What do you guys think about that?
You know, I Tupelo honey's great. Don't get me wrong. But I am so tired of seeing it put up on a pedestal. The only thing it has is that it doesn't crystallize as fast. I mean, Tupelo will eventually crystallize if you let it sit long enough. I don't think it tastes as good as some of the honey that my bees have produced. And I like honey on flavor. I don't care if it crystallizes. If it crystallizes, I'll put it in some warm water and melt it down again. But Tupelo has the rep because it doesn't crystallize. I don't think the flavor is all that great.
You should try the black mangrove honey that grows in the Keys. It's the only place that it can be harvested from. So the next time you're taking a trip, whether it's in the state of Florida or otherwise, try to find some local honey and taste it. Again, it's a lot like wines. Where it comes from makes all the difference.
And my favorite is sourwood, which doesn't come from Florida at all. It's up North Georgia, North Carolina.
I like gallberry honey, which is a local honey. Tastes similar to Tupelo, but I just like that taste better.
Interesting. And Rick, what was your favorite honey?
The stuff that my bees produce. And Frenchtown wildflowers.
Very cool.
Fall honey is the best. The early spring honey is clear and beautiful, but very sweet. Late fall, tastes are richer.
Yeah, and I like my early summer and spring honey from the crimson clover.
All right. It looks like we've got another caller waiting here on the line for us. Jack wants to talk with us just about the value of bees. Jack, welcome to Perspectives. Sorry, Jack. Are you there? Welcome to Perspectives.
Yes, thank you. I just appreciate the expertise you brought to the table. My wife, Charlotte, has been a beekeeper now 4 years. I'm the photographer and the promoter, but I just wanted to underline what was said about the value of the association. Our mentor has been Rick Flagg on your show. And
this is Jack Levine, isn't it?
the value of mentorship, you know, is across the board among, you know, hobbyists, but it's also about inspiration because it is a little bit of a complicated process, but when someone with expertise kind of guides you along, it really is valuable. The other key point I wanted to make is, you know, this is part of life cycle, and with more attention to good eating, Commissioner Putnam in agriculture has been promoting that through his work. You know, this is part of what young children and teenagers can learn, that, you know, not all foods, not all vegetables are French fries. And when we, you know, look at gardens and community gardens and the bees' role in promoting, you know, not only pollination but the value of good eating, it's a real movement. And I just want to compliment anyone who is even contemplating being a keeper, because it's really a great club. So thanks so much for this great, great outreach.
All right, Jack, thanks for your comments. So I think that was an interesting point that Jack made about, you know, the fact that bees are so important for growing our crops and our agriculture here in Florida. And that brought me back to, Melanie, what you were talking about before with the idea that bees are not native to North America. And so, you know, I'm wondering, is that part of the reason that they're struggling now? And is there something, is there a solution for continuing to grow our crops that we have if we continue to lose bees?
That's a great question. Look, think about yourself. How many of us really are native to North America? And yet, we've managed to live and thrive and survive. However, as Bob mentioned early on, beekeepers have a responsibility with the pests that have been imported, which cause such stress on the bees that they do abscond or the colony collapses, to, if you're going to keep bees, you have to keep them. You have to look at them. You don't have to bother them too much, but you have to make sure that you're not providing an environment in which the pests will grow, just like keeping the pests out of your own home. So once that happens, the bees can thrive, and their natural instinct, just as our own, is to reproduce, to continue the species. And we intend to prevent swarms. So we can expand. In fact, each hive in the spring, if it's been well managed, might have two or three or more swarms. So suddenly a beekeeper who has two hives will suddenly have, or could have, six or eight or more. And therefore the club provides an opportunity to share those or sell them.
Mm-hmm. Here's something interesting that I read about, and I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but in a city in China where an apple orchard grew and they had a major apple production, one year the bees just suddenly stopped showing up, and the apple keepers said, oh no, what will we do? And they employed a bunch of people to use paintbrushes to hand pollinate each of the apples, and it turned out that that was actually more effective, and I think some economists have argued even more economically beneficial than bees. And so I guess I just wonder, you know, what do you guys say to that? You know, can we say, well, our bees are dying and we're trying to do something about it, but as a backup, we can always hand pollinate our agriculture.
What a wonderful job to have, wouldn't
right.
it be? A pollinator? Can you imagine paying for a fleet of people to go out and pollinate everything? My goodness, I don't know how you could handle the labor costs. The bees at least don't charge us.
Yeah. That's I don't the think reason we have enough humans on the planet to do that.
Yeah, that's the reason we import so much stuff from China, because they can afford to do that. I don't think you could hire people to do that in this country.
Well, think about the food that you've eaten, whether it's peanut butter, whether it's zucchini, an orange, an apple. Every single one of those had to have been pollinated to produce the fruit that you ate. So I think it may be every third bite of food, or if you're eating healthy, as an earlier caller recommended, it might be every other bite of food that you take has been pollinated, and the primary pollinators are bees. And we can't simply hope that everything is going to be fine. We have to work towards working with the environment to make it
Right. And another point that, somebody might make is that, sure, maybe we could pay somebody to hand pollinate all of our orange crops. But what about all of the wildflowers that grow and the wild foods that grow that we forage? And what about everybody's garden? Are we going to hand pollinate all of those things as well? And I think that's maybe a case where bees are just relatively irreplaceable here in Florida.
I don't think any one of us is going to argue with that, no. Regan.
I have a neighbor who has a garden that sells food at one of the farmers markets and said, since you've been keeping bees, the level of my production have gone up. So we exchange back and forth. It's great.
Oh, yeah. That's really great.
And I've got a friend who grows tongue, you know, the thing you make tongue oil out of. And coming up this Saturday, we're going to move a hive out to one of his properties. He doesn't think he's getting enough tongue knots out of his trees, so we're going to put some bees out there and see if that improves anything. I mean, they're pretty handy. You can move a hive rather easily. It's kind of scary. Just put a little trap on the front to keep them in there, strap the thing up, and just put it in the back of your car, and you're gone. It is kind of funny driving down the highway, you know, with a bee hive in the back and you're wearing your suit because they can always get out.
The beehive's just in the back seat?
I have a Honda Element. It fit perfectly in the back.
Wow.
Yeah. Man. Actually, I fit two hives in there when I was moving them.
I wonder how tongue oil honey would taste.
You'll know soon.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting point I wanted to talk about. You guys were all talking a little while ago about what some of your favorite honeys are. And all of these honeys are named after the source that the bee pollinates when it's making that honey. So like wildflower honey, the bee is pollinating wildflowers. I wanted to talk a little bit about that and a little bit about how honey can be used then to help people fight allergies. That's something I've heard. Do you guys know anything about that?
You don't want to hear what the truth of the matter is, that most allergies are related to small pollens, and bees use large pollens. So it really doesn't work very well. But I don't argue with results. I have a lot of people that tell me that they get so much better with their allergies if they use honey, and I just have to smile and say, good. But Jamie Ellis, who is the guru of beekeeping for the state of Florida, says that most allergies are related to grass-type pollens, which are small pollens, not pollens that bees use.
Mm-hmm. But as Bob says, nonetheless, there are people who swear by it. There are people – I've got four customers who that's the only reason they buy it. They say it helps them with allergies. And you know, if it helps, great. We don't have any studies that prove it does, but if it helps you, terrific.
Yeah, I don't argue with results.
Yeah.
And so is the goal then to be buying the honey from the thing that's causing your allergy or from that season, or is it just any local honey?
Just local. Just local.
Yeah. Interesting.
What's fascinating to me is I learned that bees are aware of what time of day a particular flower is producing the most nectar. So they will go at that point. And when they're collecting, they'll collect from all the same at one time. They won't go from this plant, from the Spanish needles, over to another flower, over to another flower and mix it all together. They'll stay with the same flower. And so it really is a range of flowers that are blooming throughout the year that they go to. They also know when the most pollen is available. And they're very specific about the pollen. As Bob said, grass is just not something that they're interested in.
That's interesting.
Yeah, there are some pollens that just don't have enough nutrients to make it worth their while. So they'll fly right over it. A lot of people think, I'll put this in and my garden will take off. But if the bees don't think they're getting enough out of your plants, they will fly right over them onto the next flower.
Mm-hmm. It looks like we've got another email question from someone, and they're trying to learn more about how they might be able to attract bees into their area. So they want to know if they build a white slatted box and put it in the woods near their house, would that be an attractor to bees that would make people make the bees come to their area? It looks like the answer from our panel is no.
Well, you can put up what we call swarm attractors. The state does it. And Tom Seeley, who's one of the bee experts worldwide, catches swarms and catches a whole lot by putting out what amounts to a nuke box. And when bees swarm, they will – this is one of the – a really fascinating thing about bees. When they swarm, they will send out scout bees – for 5 miles around and look for the best place. And they will measure the size of it, and qualify it. Then they come back to the swarm and do a dance to explain what they found to the rest of the bees. And over a 24-hour period, those bees will vote, and they will pick the best location 90% of the time and go to that place and make their new home. If you put out an attractive place, you may attract a swarm, and that would be a new colony of bees. But your chances of that are, you know, slim. I wouldn't advise somebody to do that in anticipation that they're going to have a swarm, going to have a beehive.
Yeah, the people who have the skills to do that are already beekeepers. So if you're just starting out, it's not going to help you out that much.
But if you want to know more about that, Tom Seeley's book is called Bee Democracy. And it is absolutely fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like, from what I've heard from you guys, that if you're just trying to attract more bees to your yard or to your area, what you do is plant flowers.
You got it.
Mm-hmm. All right. It looks like we've got another caller on the line here. Renee has some questions for us about honeybees. Hi, Renee. Welcome to Perspectives.
It looks like we've got another caller on the line here.
Hi, Renee. It sounds like maybe you're listening to the radio. Could you maybe turn that down for us so that we don't get that echo back? Oh, I'm sorry. It sounds like we've just got a bad connection with Renee there. Sorry we missed your call. But if anybody else would like to call in and ask a question of our panel here, you can give us a call at 414-1234. Or if you're outside of the Tallahassee area, you can reach us at 1-800-926-8809.
We do have the short course coming up, and that's closed right now because of all the people who signed up. But there is another option if you're interested. I wanted to plug this. The state is doing a beekeeping in the Panhandle short course. It's out down at the IFAS Center, and it'll be happening in March. Looks like they're meeting 4 days, and they're going to do one day with open hives. And it's like $20 a person, and you could learn a lot at that. So if you're interested in that, just call the Leon County office at 606-5202 for the Beekeeping in the Panhandle short course.
Okay. And how often do you guys have your short course locally here? So if this one's filled but you maybe want to catch the next one, how frequently does that happen?
It's just once a year.
Oh, wow.
At the
once
end
a
of
year.
February.
But the last Saturday in February.
I wanted to say that if you miss the short course this year, and you will if you haven't already registered because it's filled, come to the meetings anyway. Come to the Appalachian Beekeepers Association meetings that happen every month. You can learn a tremendous amount that way. And I know I personally had signed up for the short course and missed it and had to wait until the next year. But in that year's period, I went to every meeting and learned a heck of a lot.
Plus, we have door prizes.
We do.
Oh, yeah. We give away all sorts of fun stuff at the end of the meetings. But you have to stay through the whole meeting to get it.
And once we go back to daylight savings time and the temperature is a little bit warmer, at the county extension office, it's been mentioned where the club meets, we have club hives. And we do what are called open hive demonstrations. I think it's every twice a month.
Twice a month.
And you can find that information on our website. But it allows you to actually go see, interact, and decide if this is for you.
All right. Another topic that I wanted to touch on a little bit is the idea of eating honey. Sometimes I feel a little torn, like if I go to a restaurant and there's a dessert that's really based in honey, you know. Should I feel like if I'm doing that I'm helping bees and yes, you would encourage me to go ahead and eat honey? Or is eating honey maybe contributing somehow to the demise of bees?
I'll put this plug in. I was speaking with someone earlier today who is a religious scholar and said he had just come across a reference that the Essene community that lived in the Middle East a long time ago were beekeepers. We know the Egyptians were beekeepers thousands and thousands of years ago. So we've been eating honey a long time, and we should eat dessert before anything else.
And if you don't like honey in your dessert, don't order honey in your dessert. Get the dessert you like.
No, but I
it doesn't
like
hurt.
Honey.
It doesn't hurt. I mean, yeah, it's an industry. And if you eat the honey dessert, you're going to help the industry, as I see it, because you're going to raise the price of honey.
Okay, so you guys would say eat the honey, especially eat the local honey, and that's going to be helpful to our bees coming up.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, great. Thank you guys so much, all of you, for joining us here on Perspectives today. I really appreciate it. And Perspectives is produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. We get technical assistance from Taylor Cox. Lydell Rawls handled the phones, and I'm Regan McCarthy. Join us again for Perspectives next Thursday.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.